welcome to episode 223 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on March 22nd, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss a topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In this episode, we're joined by Larry from our long-term sponsor, ShareGate. We chat with him all about ShareGate's recently published State of Microsoft 365.
All right, Scott, it's another Friday.
It is. They keep coming up. I'm super excited for today for a few reasons. We have a guest on the show, and Florida is opening up vaccinations, so I'm going to go get my shot in my arm and probably spend the week shivering in bed, like the weekend. Just, I'm looking forward to it.
All I care about is that you're better by next Friday so we can record again.
Well, good. I'm glad you're thinking of me.
Absolutely. You're always at the top of my mind, Scott.
Who's our guest today, Ben?
We have Larry today from ShareGate. So ShareGate has been a longtime sponsor of the show. So first of all, a big thanks to Larry and to ShareGate for their continued sponsorship and support of the show. But we also got them on because they recently came out with some very interesting reading material, and we're going to talk through that a little bit. So, Larry, do you want to give a little bit of introduction about yourself and kind of what you have here? And we'll just dive right into the conversation.
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. Really glad to be on the show after listening to you guys for a year and a half now. I don't even remember.
We don't even remember how long we've been recording. Time just flies when you're having fun, right?
Exactly. My name's Larry St-Pierre. I work at ShareGate for 6 years now. ShareGate was kind of my first step into the tech world, into the Microsoft industry. I worked in different areas of the business over those 6 years. One thing that was always true is that I traveled a lot. And through that traveling, I kind of got to meet a lot of people in the community. And over the years, I grew in what we called a community enablement manager, where my role is essentially to make sure or take care of ShareGate's involvement in the Microsoft community. So it's important for us to be there and to support community initiatives, you know, whether it's great initiatives like this podcast or, you know, any kind of like user groups or anything, make sure that we're there and we support that. And there's also some content that we do for the community and in collaboration with the community. And I think we've worked really hard on this one, and we're pretty excited to come and talk about it
today. And Scott and I have both started reading it too. We haven't gotten through all of it yet, but we are definitely going to cover it. And I would encourage everybody to go read this. And this is The State of Microsoft 365, Migration, Modernization, and Security in 2021. So, I mean, right in the title, you kind of tell us what you're going to cover in here. You start out with a little bit of summary on the state, you dive into migration, modernization, and security, and then kind of wrap it all up. And I'm imagining, and just from the initial reading I've done of this too, the state of Microsoft 365 it was probably fascinating to write about this, given the circumstances over the last year or so.
Yeah, and that's really what sparked the idea, right? So, I mean, it's not a surprise to anyone. You know, 2020 was a very disruptive year for everyone, and it affected, you know, users and how they use the platform. And like Satya said, it was a 2 years worth of digital transformation in like 2 months. So it was important for us, and we know it's important for a lot of people to kind of like stay up to date with that. And for us, as you know, a business that builds software, as well, it's important to understand where our users are, you know, what's happening, what's their situation right now, so we can adapt, right? And both write content that's appealing to their situation right now and build software that answers those issues. So it was really important for us to take the time to go and ask the questions, look at the data, because we get a lot of feedback from our customers while traveling, while meeting them in different events. Obviously, there hasn't been much of that happening lately. So it was just important for us to just get out there and do our own assessment of what was happening. And we just thought it would be a great idea to share it with everybody out there.
Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running,
IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at IntelliJink.com/podcast. That's IntelliJink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business. All right. So kind of to start with, because this is everyone's question, right, is how did you come up with the data for the report? Because everybody wants to know.
It was a lot of work. We think it was well worth it. So it was important for us to get both quantitative and qualitative data. So the first thing that we did is that we did surveys to our user base and follower base. So we had over 800 respondents to our surveys. And that represents a good kind of pretty much every type of company in the industry. So it goes from smaller companies to enterprise companies in pretty much any vertical or any business areas, essentially. So from government to tech. So we've got a good representation of pretty much everybody in there. That was the first thing. So that the surveys really helped us. Then we looked at data from our products. So we do have a significant user base, and we looked at data usage in our products and how that relates to Microsoft 365. So we had both the kind of like more quantitative, qualitative data. And then the last thing that we did were interview with industry experts. So kind of try to cross-reference what we're seeing in the data and what they were seeing on the field. So they were all, most of them were consultants working with many different customers. So just trying to get some more kind of meat around the bone over, here's the data, here's what the data says, but like, here's what the expert says, and try to kind of cross-reference that. So those were kind of like the main three things that we used for the report.
Got it. Very cool. And then out of that, was there, I'm guessing there were probably certain things that just jumped out at you right away out of that report, or some of that, or any highlights from gathering that data, that initial data analysis that kind of cover all of this at that broader spectrum of those highlights of different things that you may have seen?
Yeah, there are some things that are more obvious. There are some things that were a bit more surprising. And I guess, those reactions may vary from one person to another. But definitely. And starting at the top, on the migration side, migration has been happening for a while now. So there is kind of like a trend that's been going on. So it's not like it was like something that the trend kind of continued. Obviously, more people going to Office 365, got a 60% decrease in on-premise to on-premise. There's no big surprise there. But personally, for me, what I find really interesting is that even over the years, the amount of people going from on-prem to the cloud is still increasing year over year. And that to me is kind of impressive, because at some point we would have expected to kind of get kind of like at that peak, right? But if we still haven't reached that peak, it means that there's still a lot of data that's on premise. And I mean, maybe for us being kind of in the community and working, if you go to events like Microsoft Ignites, you realize that sometimes you're maybe just more in contact with those people that are maybe, I guess, you can call them maybe more early adopters, and that there's a lot of people that are still on premise and that we just don't hear as much about, but they're definitely there, because we see, there's still that long tail of on-premise content that's still there and very present.
Do you view that? Are there any insights that indicate that's a long tail of remaining organizations that are staying on premises and willing to migrate? Or are there just certain, at some point I'd expect we hit that inflection point too, where not only is there not things to still move, or there's things that just can't move, right? There might be like a vertical or an industry that has to stay behind and be on premises in some way, shape, or form for compliance, regulatory reasons, whatever it happens to be. And then they get to become our fun hybrid friends.
I think it's all of those answers. I mean, this mentality of we're not going to the cloud, it's not safe anymore, is not something that we hear about or we see very much. So usually when we talk to people that are still on premise, is that they know they're going to go there, but it just takes more time and, they're just not quite ready, is what we see more. But definitely there's also the industry aspect of it. So the main industry industries, obviously, were like banking, government, manufacturing. So those kind of businesses that are
the usual suspects.
The usual suspects that are probably going to stay there, and that's fine. We know, and that's one we talk about it also in the report, is that on-premise is there to stay, right? And that's something that we've. I mean, we're not the ones who come up with that conclusion. I know Microsoft talks about it, and we know it's there to stay to some extent, but you know the trend keeps on going.
Well, it's always on premises, right? It's either on your premises or it's on Microsoft's premises.
Right. But that's a secret.
Let's not be too pedantic now.
That is fascinating to me that you do continue to go year over year.
And yeah.
Did you see? So is it a fairly linear? Like, is it every year it's doubling, or every year it's kind of going up by a linear growth in terms of the number of people migrating to the cloud? And then in this last year, did you see, was there even a massive increase? Like, I think in my head, I think, oh, 2020, they probably saw it like it was kind of going and going and going. And then everybody was like, we got to go to the cloud because of COVID. But was that actually the case? Is that what you saw? Or did you see it stay pretty consistent this year from previous?
Yeah, even with the with what happened with COVID and the rush to go to the cloud, I think it's still somewhat stayed linear, because what we saw from the data as well is that the companies that were most impacted or that really changed their schedules were the ones that already had something on the roadmap. So people were thinking about going in like 1 to 2 years, didn't necessarily just like start a migration project from scratch. We saw an increase in speed of people who were kind of like on going project or very close to that happening. Those are the businesses that really pushed forward and just made it happen faster. But those who just hadn't really touched on the migration question yet didn't necessarily just like start a migration project and made it happen in a question of like a month or two. So it depends. I guess it depends, but overall it stayed pretty linear.
Interesting.
One thing that increased though was cloud to cloud migration. So that's something that we, again, throughout the years, we're seeing more and more of it. So whether it's mergers and acquisitions or just like companies with multiple tenants or just companies that are reorganizing their tenant, right? And we saw a lot of that, and we think that it's a testament to this kind of lift and shift mentality that happened throughout the year because people were rushed in the cloud. But then there was this whole, okay, well, now that we're there and we just like literally just moved everything the way it was on premise, now that obviously doesn't work in the cloud. We got to go with like a flat hierarchy to use all the functionalities. There was a lot of reorganization of content to be done at the destination. So we think that was a big contributing factor to seeing such an increase in cloud-to-cloud migrations.
Got it. So you saw more of that this year because, like you said, there were some companies that were maybe on a 1 or a 2 year plan that were planning to reorganize as they went to the cloud or do it gradually over 2 years. Then all of a sudden they decided, let's just do it all at once. And then maybe we gradually reorganize over the next year to now that we're in the cloud.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we try to promote, is like when you're migrating, that's the perfect moment to just like reorganize your content, you know, leave some stuff behind and, you know, plan accordingly. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of businesses didn't have that luxury of doing all that planning and taking their time and putting the stuff exactly at the right place. There was a lot of, you know, just pushing forward and just making it happen, and then we'll deal with that later.
Do you see that those migrations or that potential growth tends to target certain areas? Like, even if a customer isn't going to fundamentally reorganize, are they taking their content from, say, on-premises SharePoint and moving those into Teams connected SharePoint sites, like group connected sites? Or are they just going, you know, it's SharePoint, let's keep it in SharePoint, and they're kind of living under that mentality? Do they view the cloud as a fundamentally different thing for them to learn about and kind of grow into?
It's a good question. I mean, exactly, on because we don't have all the data in terms of exactly all where all the content was migrated, and was it migrated into like sites that are already Teams connected. We didn't see any kind of like major trends. I think from what we see, like people understand and they know what they need to do, and like it's I think it was just a matter of, you know, getting ready just right now, getting the user able to collaborate. You know, it was within a matter of days, right? And then it was just like trying to get the content there as fast as possible and just rearranging as things go. So there wasn't like a major trend there that was like, okay, so this is exactly how people made it happen. It was just kind of more really reacting to the very short notice.
Gotcha.
Yeah, the whole cloud to cloud migration and that continued to always interest me too in why companies are doing it. Now, I've done a few of them, and for me, I tend to see a lot of the mergers and acquisitions. Someone buys a company that already has Office 365 and now they have to merge those together. And the conversation, so just to ask you a little bit about ShareGate, because one of the things that I always run into with those that seems to be the biggest challenge is Teams conversations migrations.
Yeah,
the files, I come from a SharePoint background, so I'm comfortable with SharePoint, Exchange mailboxes, those have been around forever. But Teams conversation migrations are, or Teams conversations are relatively new. Are you seeing that as a big deal too with these migrations and something that you guys can help with ShareGate is these mergers and acquisitions want to keep those conversations when they bring these two tenants together?
Yeah, we definitely saw a huge interest for that. Like, unfortunately, throughout our telemetry, we don't have that much data to compare because the feature was launched in May. So it's not like we can go back to 2019 and compare if there was like a huge increase. But definitely, we've got a few numbers on that on the report. And just by the adoption of those functionalities, we saw that there was a really, really big need for that. And definitely conversations are part of that. Because obviously, you know, migrating the SharePoint behind is one thing, but like you said, the conversation is something completely different, and that is important for companies. And I think a lot of people were waiting for that. And for a lot of customers that already have their ShareGate license, just to just have that kind of be included as a surprise, but I think was a big a big relief for a lot of people. We got a lot of love and a lot of comments on that one.
Yeah, look, a lot there's of people an easy looking forward for this. To that.
Exactly. Yeah, but yeah, for sure. Yeah, the 144% in cloud to cloud migration that we saw, I think Teams definitely played a big role in that. So, and I think, you know, we saw when there was a migration at the very beginning, we saw that there was throughout our users, there was a 21% increase in group creation. So you saw that people just at the very beginning really leaned into the technology to really support their day-to-day, really started using all those workloads. Obviously, groups, we know they can be created in many, many different ways. So we saw that there was a really big, really big need for that. There was an increase in 60% unused groups that we qualify by being, you know, untouched for 90 days. So definitely you saw that there was that kind of like big boom, like we got to use the technology. We don't really know how. And that's when people kind of like, okay, so this team's not at the right place. You know, this group's not at the right place. And we need to kind of rearrange, you know, this kind of big boom that happened at the very beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, there's probably a bunch of things that happen along the way there. That could be anything from we didn't have time to train our users.
Yeah.
They're just going and clicking buttons because
exactly,
for better or worse, Teams as a product is something that you need. I fundamentally believe you need to do all up user adoption campaigns around. You can't just hand somebody a couple links and say, here, go read this support article and you'll know how it works. So you've got a lot of that. And then I also would have to think some of this is just operationally driven. So coming out the other side and saying, okay, we just migrated a bunch of data, a bunch of users, a bunch of conversations, whatever the context or that business process that moved was. Now, did the business process change and do we have to change along the way with it? Or like you said, I just created 21% more team sites in my tenant. What does that mean? Do I have a handle on it? And can I figure out what's going on there and actually continue to operate in the cloud, maybe in a manner that's better, hopefully better than I was operating on-prem?
Yeah. And touching on that training aspect that you mentioned, Scott, the one thing that I found interesting was that 57% of survey respondents said that they had sufficient time to train users on new tools and processes, but then only 19% said that they had official training and training material available for teams. You know, that makes us think, like, is there a little blind spot there? Like, are a lot of companies seeing Teams as just kind of like this chat and this new Skype essentially for you to do your meetings, which it does, but there's a lot more to it, right? So like what happens when you create a team? What happens when you create, you know, private channels, external sharing? How does that work exactly? And, you know, while training on how to do a meeting is not super critical, I mean, some people that they'll get, you know, they'll understand it, or a colleague can guide them on and just kind of how to do it.
We just need to teach everybody about the mute button and then we're good.
Yeah, exactly. But then we still keep forgetting it about ourselves, but that's another story. But yeah, so there's those security aspects and, you know, generating all those new resources and what's happening under the hood that users don't know, you know, exactly how that works. And there should be training for that. And we see a little gap there. And, you know, what people, a lot of people think they're good, but there's very little training happening. So we're expecting that there's maybe a few little blind spots there.
So Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud. Yeah, so going back to one of your points there that I'm curious about, if you got any data about it, because it's something I've seen as well, is that whole concept of what are people actually using Teams for? Like, are they literally just spinning it up for conversations and meetings, or are they using it for files? Are companies even creating Teams and channels, or again, are they literally just using it for meetings and meetings and chat conversations? Because I've had conversations with a couple people about it, and I am surprised at the number of people I've talked to that don't use channels and Teams at all. They're just doing chat meetings in it. So I'm curious if your company looked at that at all, or if you have any further insight than that handful of people I've talked to.
No, it's a good question. We didn't really dive into like the exactly how the end users like use Teams and you know the different functionalities within Teams. We kind of stayed more on kind of like the IT professional and the IT admin side of the question. One thing, you know, obviously that we surveyed was, and I found interesting, is that what was the reason for companies to move to a more modern approach? So, and when we say modern, kind of like adopting just modern way of working, modern infrastructure and whatnot. And obviously Teams was the first, the number one spot with, I think it was roughly 40%, but then followed by a more seamless integration with Power Platform, which I thought was interesting. And like Ben said, Benjamin Nyland, our head of product, you know, people aren't at the office anymore. You can't just walk over and go talk to John. That he needs to do this and that, and people are really looking to automate processes more. And we thought that was pretty interesting, and that's going to keep probably increasing as well over the years.
Yeah. So with some of that modernization and people going more to Teams, what have you seen? And I know in here you talk a little bit about, we've talked a little bit about users still needing guidance. You talked to us some too about these companies that end up with all these groups created, but then never use them.
Yeah.
From that IT administrator's perspective, are you finding that as people go to Office 365, they're empowering their end users or allowing? I don't know if it's an allowing or if it's an empowering, but essentially end users are having more ability to quickly spin up teams, spin up groups, or are IT companies still looking to put governance in place around they have to go through certain processes? What did you see from that perspective?
I think with the big boom that we touched on of creation, I think a lot of companies, whether they liked it or not, kind of like had to resolve this to that more self-service approach, right? Because everybody needed stuff right now just to continue collaborating. And a lot of companies started using it. We saw that there. Sorry, I had a train of thought. I just completely lost. I was looking at my stats because there's so many numbers and I was trying to look for a stat, but I kind of lost it there. Yeah, so in terms of self-service, we saw on Apricot, our product that is automated governance, and there's a notion in Shared Apricot which we call entrusting a group. So essentially is that it's a functionality you enable in the product and that you entrust a group to its owner. So you can enable that at the group level, but also at the tenant level.
Okay.
Essentially is what that does is that you tell that owner is like, you're now in control of your group. So you're reviewing, the permissions, you're reviewing external links, and you're in charge of archival once the project is done. We saw an increase in, and that was the number I was looking for, and I can't quite find it, but I don't remember it, but we saw there was a big increase. I think it was 64%, but don't quote me on that. I might be mistaken. So we saw that people were like, okay, like we really need to involve users in this process because we're not going to be able to stay on top of things.
Got it. So Apricot, because I'm always fascinated too about tools, especially around governance. So governance has always been a topic that has interested me, especially coming from a long history of SharePoint and seeing what companies did with SharePoint on premises. Does Apricot do a lot more from the, I would say almost, you said automated governance in terms of kind of watching the environment and letting you know when you have stale sites out there, stale content out there, or which sites are, maybe you need to clean up. So almost more of a, I don't want to call it a reactive governance, but a monitoring governance versus a governance mindset of, let's put a gatekeeper in front of it so people use Apricot to create sites. How does that expand a little bit on that automated governance and what that is?
Yeah. So there's
that's just interesting.
Yeah. So there's definitely in the product, there's definitely that notion of giving you visibility over what's happening in your environment. If you want to stay on top of things, kind of like yourself and getting kind of like that bird eye view over your environment, understanding what's happening. But what really makes it stand out is like what we shot is the automated aspect of it. So, and it's what we call collaborative governance as well, because as we give users more power, with great power comes great responsibility. So you need the input from those users, and you need their help because they are the ones who are in contact with the content. It's hard for you to know if you can archive a group, if you don't really know what it's used for. Maybe it's just used once a year. Maybe it's like for the annual Christmas party. I don't know. And then you're like, well, nobody's using it, and then you'd archive it. So, just a silly example, but the users are really the ones who know what's happening. And it's really about bringing them in and giving them more responsibility and helping you stay in control over what's happening. But you still have that aspect of giving yourself the visibility. It's not only relying on the users. But yeah, so like you said, it's not a form that needs to be approved or anything. We're very much encouraged self-service and want to empower users for them to create what they need. So they can go ahead and create that. We also have, there's a bot in there that will go and ask them the questions and help you kind of like understand what's happening. So understanding what the group is used for, what's the sensitivity level of the content in there, so you can automatically apply policies. So yeah, so that's kind of like the whole automation aspect of it essentially is, bringing in the end users to help you do that.
Okay, very cool. And we'll make sure, Larry, we'll get some links from you too.
Yep.
For places people can go to visit all this. So if you are interested in checking out some of these products as well, or if you have demos, any links you want us to put, we'll put all of those in the show notes so people can go check all these out as well.
Sounds good.
The other topic you have in here, we've kind of talked a little bit about the summary, the migration, the modernization. You also have a good section here on security.
Yeah.
So what did you look at in the state of Microsoft 365 when it came to security?
Yeah, well, obviously, one, you know, we wanted to look, and we didn't have to look very far to understand that, you know, a lot of companies kind of did a little compromising when it came to security in order to enable users to collaborate very, very quickly. Just like looking at other surveys and other reports that are online, I think it's 85% of chief information security officers said that they did compromise security for in order to enable collaboration during the pandemic. And that's from a NetRisk survey. That wasn't even data that we pulled up. So it was already available there. And really looking into like, what does that mean for Microsoft 365, right? We saw that there was a big increase, 67% in external shared links, which is a good thing. Obviously, we want users to be using that, because if they're not using that, odds are they're still doing that external sharing, but you just don't know it's happening.
It's just going out in email.
Right.
Exactly, right? So it's a good thing to see that. I mean, quite frankly, I'm a bit more worried about the other 33%. But at the same time, we understand that, you know, different industries, different regulations. So it's normal that they're not everybody's using the external sharing aspect of it. An increase in 53% of groups that had externally shared content. We saw that through Apricot. So people are really using the tech, and, you know, there's some people are sharing stuff externally. So there are some risks that need to be assessed there. And there's a very, very small percentage of companies that actually do and review those links and really know what's shared externally in their business.
Do you see that organizations are able to figure out some of these settings operationally? Like, I would think a lot of it is, you know, if you were fast-tracked into Microsoft 365 or Office 365 and you hadn't been there already and you hadn't been keeping up with it, there's just a lot of knobs and levers that you don't know that are available to you to kind of twist and turn, right? External sharing. Do I allow it to be shared with anyone? Do I share with verification codes? Do I lockdown sharing where it can only be, you know, users in my organization? Like, those are all things you can do, but you might not know that you could do depending on your environment and, you know, what you have purview to in the admin, various admin centers.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, for me, like when I see that 25% of people don't require a sign-in with external shared content, maybe rings a bell. I was like, okay, well, maybe some people didn't see that, like you said, that knob there. There's a lot of stuff that people need to figure out, and we think people are doing it right now. But we think it's going to take time for people to do that. You know, for instance, I think it's only 24% of companies have any, you know, sort of data classification policy or scheme, and with, you know, obviously people are slowly moving to the cloud. Some people were rushed there. And we think those are going to be kind of like the next big things coming up. And talking to in interviews, both our industry expert interviews with Joanne Klein and Jasper Oosterveld, they said that compliance and classification will be big things, because as people are using those kind of like self-service functionalities, you know, that content is going out there, you need to know what that content is. And if you're not using any sort of classification, you're essentially putting that blanket statement over all your content that all content is created equal. And that's not true, right? Because you want to enable those users to share content as much as possible, but you want to stay in control. You need those guardrails, and classification is going to be, we think it's going to be a big thing. And, you know, people just didn't seem to have the time to get to that just yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was just kind of skimming through some of the security numbers here on... It feels like you said, that we're kind of in that in-between state where people have recognized SharePoint. They've recognized the ability to put files up there, to share the links up there, to use that for collaboration, but haven't quite reached the point of, okay, what can we now do to actually make sure it's protected? Like, you look at those classification labels that you talked about. I was also noticed in there the percentage of people that have some type of audit in place to actually track external sharing links, and that is probably a little bit lower than maybe I would have expected, or probably lower than it should be, considering some of these external links could be out there for a while, and there are the tools out there to help review them and help monitor. So it'll be interesting, especially if you do this again next year, to see if that number has increased in terms of what people are doing to actually protect their content now that they're starting to share it more from Office 365?
Yeah, across the board, right? What we see now is that we feel like people are a little behind on a few things, and that one's a great example. And comparing year over year, like, are people actually catching up? And if they are, at what pace are they? You know, are they catching up? But yeah, I think, you know, like you said, the amount of people that have those kind of audits in place is very low, especially when you cross reference it with the amount of people who have classification, right? So you've got a lot of content out there, but you have no idea if it's sensitive content or not. You don't have a way to validate that. And when you put those two factors together, there is a risk there.
Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. The one that surprised me on the other side is the number of people that said they have MFA.
I know,
enabled.
Yeah. Same for that. That was really, really high, honestly. And that's a good thing. But yeah, for sure.
It is. Looking at that, for those of you listening, it's 86% of your respondents. Yeah. So they had MFA enabled. And I mean, there's been a big push for it. So maybe it shouldn't surprise me, but I did not think it would be that high. I thought there were more people that were still kind of resisting it or not enabling it. But no, that's a good one to see.
Yeah, and we think a lot of people kind of, and talking to Joanne in the interview with her, we touched on that. But like this switch to the zero trust mentality that's becoming more and more prevalent and was kind of like a good way for people to, I guess, sleep better at night, is that, you know, a lot of people were forced to, I think it was 27% of companies allowed users to use their, oh no, 67, sorry, of companies allowed personal devices. It's pretty big. And so a lot of people are kind of like forced to go down that kind of zero trust, always assume breach. And it's getting bigger and bigger, and it's probably going to become an industry standard.
I just love that idea of you've migrated to the cloud and that became a forcing function for everybody to get better at security.
Yeah.
Because we had to enable collaboration across the organization. Like, that's just an interesting byproduct of that entire thing. And along the way, I was kind of struck as I read through the report that you get this sense that as everybody's migrating and they're figuring out how to modernize and how to work their way through security, like, there's better conversations happening between potentially IT operations and the business itself, so that they can go out there and understand those business processes. Like, what do we need to classify? What type of external sharing makes sense for this classification? All those kinds of things. So there seems to be like a nice synergy there that's actually coming out. Like, hey, we're all talking to each other more.
Yeah. And one question I had for you is just interested to see your take. You know, you guys are out there, you're talking to a lot of people. On a scale from 0 to 10, you know, like, how would you rate the impacts of what happened in terms of like crisis management? How did things go and how do you think it went? Like, 0 being a total disaster and 10 being just like nothing happened.
For most of the organizations I interact with, like, they're fairly mature enterprises. So they have their heads on straight when it comes to a lot of this. And quite frankly, they have things like budgets to train their employees on new tools, which says, hey, not just their employees, but their operators as well. Like, how do we bring this up? How do we administer it? What does that look like? And they're savvy enough to make all that work. You know, across the board for me, most that I interact with, they're easily like an 8+. They're able to grasp it and get with it. It's been more the kind of human side of the equation as things drag out, right? Like, are people willing to continue to stay in this path of remote meetings every day, right? Like, as things drag on, you see less and less cameras come on. You see less and less mute buttons coming off, things like that. Like, can we drag everybody through that and figure out where we swing back to? Like, where's the pendulum kind of fallout?
The engagement aspect.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
For me, I was surprised how smoothly it went for most of the companies I interact with too. I have a broad range. So I have some companies I work with that are only 5 users. The advantage they had is it's only 5 users. They were able to pivot pretty quickly from what they were doing to leveraging various tools in the cloud. One thing I ran across with a couple enterprises that I work with is almost the too many cooks in the kitchen is all of a sudden we have all these users, we have thousands of users that can't get to our file shares. Our VPN can't handle it. What do we do when some people are like, let's increase VPN, and other people are like, let's increase SharePoint? So initially in March and April, there was some of the bigger companies, I felt like there was a little bit of that infighting or just a confusion of, we have a boatload of content. How do we get our users access to it? And not like, what's going to be the fastest thing to migrate to? What's going to be the fastest solution? And there was maybe 2 or 3 weeks of that where it was just a little bit of mass confusion, I felt like, in terms of how do we get where we need to be? Once they got over that initial hurdle, I felt like it went really smooth. Like, it was mass confusion. Once they figured it out, I feel like across the board, all of them I worked with from small to big, the transition was a lot smoother than I think I thought it would be.
Yeah, same. But that's why I was asking the question, right? So it feels like we did avoid like the crisis there, I think. Well, I mean, and not to say that there wasn't a lot of hard work put in by a lot of people, right? So obviously, I think people had some very long weeks and were really hard to make it happen. But in terms of like the impacts at the end, I think it speaks to the platform's readiness to kind of support all that and that shift to the distributor. Like, can you imagine if that happened like 10 years ago? It would not have been the same thing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the technology wasn't there 10 years ago. The other thing I think is you're starting to see more and more people that, I mean, people Scott and I's age, that we grew up with technology, so there's a little bit more of that comfort with technology for more people in the workforce than maybe there would have been 10 years ago. And I think that helped a little bit. There were a lot of people that are used to, whether it be Facebook Messenger or Snapchat or these different modern communication solutions, that I think that also has helped to make that transition a little bit smoother.
Definitely. Yeah, for sure.
So anything else? We're coming up on probably wrap it up here. Any other highlights, either about ShareGate you want to share with people about the products you're working on, what's coming, or any other conclusions, summaries, highlights that you found in the state of Microsoft 365? Anything you want to wrap up with that you want to tell everybody that we haven't asked you?
No, I mean, in terms of like the highlights, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. You know, don't want to spoil everything, but the report's very, very thorough. There's a lot of stuff in there. As much as you can, just go ahead and read through it from top to bottom. We also split in, so it's very easy to navigate through kind of the index that's always there on the side. So you can jump to the areas that are important to you. So even if it's like very heavy in terms of content, don't feel like you need to go through every, it's not meant to be only read from top to bottom. So you can just go to what really interests you. That's one thing. But in terms of products, you know, maybe just a little reminder of what we do. Don't want to get too much into a product pitch, but you know, if you need help with any kind of SharePoint migration, Teams migration, we're definitely there for you. And anything that has to do with Office 365 and Teams governance. So if you are part of those people who are kind of like pushed and rushed to the cloud, and now you're looking at like, okay, well, how do we get this under control? Definitely just look us up and we'll be happy to help you with that and make it as easy as possible for you guys.
All right. Well, thanks, Larry. And again, we'll get a bunch of links from you. We'll put all those in the show notes. If people are on the mailing list, they'll get all those links in the mailing list so they can go check those out. And definitely go sign up and read the state of Microsoft 365. There's a lot of good information in there and helps you think through a lot of things. And what am I doing? And are there things that I should do differently as well? So appreciate it, Larry. Thanks for joining us today and for talking through this.
Well, yeah. Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, anytime. Yeah.
That was great.
We'll have to do it. Maybe we'll have to make it an annual thing. Are you going to keep coming out with these now every... Have you done this before? Is this the first time you've done one of these?
No, that's the first. Like really, like the change brought by the pandemic kind of like really pushed us to do it. But if people like it and we've got a good reception, definitely I don't see why we wouldn't make this an annual. And now it's going to be fun, right? Because we're going to be able to go back to the previous years and really compare those different reports year over year. But yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, 2021 versus 2022 will be a fun one to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. We'll have to do this like an annual state of Microsoft 365. We get on and talk about your report every year too. That'd be fun.
That'd be great.
All right. Well, thanks again, Larry. Go enjoy your weekend. Don't work too hard, and we'll talk to you again later.
All right. Thanks, guys.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.